Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Crime, a true crime podcast. If you're new here, hi, hello, how you doing? My name is Lisa Marie, and I like to sit down with a cup of coffee and talk about true crime. Wow, that was weird. It was so hard not to like flick into auto mode and be like, and each week I sit down with a cup of coffee, because if you listened to last week's episode, I'm no longer a weekly podcast, I'm now fortnightly, and I already feel way less stressed about recording and putting in the effort and time into researching and preparing this episode than when I was doing this weekly. Like, don't get me wrong, we love a little pressure, we love a time crunch, but let's be honest, this podcast is my hobby. The real life still continues when I finish recording, and for the next foreseeable future, it's going to be really busy, which is great. It keeps me out of trouble. Ain't no devil getting touch of these idle hands, because they ain't idle. But I don't want to start hating this hobby because of that time pressure, so it's been good to have a little bit of flexibility. I love it. But let me know if you know what I should say in my intro, because I'm still figuring that out. So I have no admin to get into today, which thank goodness, because I hate intros. If you've been here a while, you know that I struggle with them, but I will just quickly apologize if I sound a bit snuffly. Been fighting a cold this week and it needs to piss off, but we're here, we're recording, it's great, and we're jumping right into it today. So, lovely listeners of Coffee and Crime, grab your cup of coffee or whatever caffeinated beverage you need to get through your day. Ain't no discriminating over here. And join me as I tell you about Robert Henry Mormon. Warning: the following episode contains adult language, discussion on kidnapping, incest, rape, sexual assault of a minor, dismemberment, and murder that listeners may find disturbing. This podcast is recommended for listeners 16 years and above. Listener discretion is advised. Bobby Conger was born on the 4th of June 1948 in Tucson, Arizona, meaning on the day that this episode comes out, it would have been his birthday, and I didn't realize that until I was scripting, and I thought that was kind of spooky. And I really hope the ghost of Bobby Conger isn't out there haunting me, because to be honest, your gal's got enough stuff going on, okay? Now, I just said I'm going to tell you about Robert Henry Mormon, but I've started off with Bobby Conger. Do not worry, because that will all become clear in just a moment. Now, we don't have a lot of information. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, because I'm going to say a lot of, we don't know this and we don't know that, but we just don't know much about his very, very early life. What we do know, let's focus on the positive. What we do know is that Bobby's father abandoned him. It's not very positive, I shouldn't say that. But Bobby's father abandoned him and his mother when he was born. And his mother was a 15-year-old sex worker who was described as a raging alcoholic. So not a great start. And I mean, in terms of his mum, whatever decisions or whatever the reasons are that were made, or the circumstances that she was in, that she ended up being a 15-year-old sex worker who was described as a raging alcoholic, in and itself is tragic. It really is. She did drink all throughout her pregnancy with Bobby, and even though it was never diagnosed, we will see evidence that it's likely he suffered from fetal alcohol syndrome. If you see any photos of him, you will also see that he has the kind of physical characteristics and traits of someone who has fetal alcohol syndrome, but we'll get into that a little bit more soon. We also don't know how Bobby's mother treated him when he was a baby, but going out on a limb, if you are dealing with alcoholism, you're probably not putting as much effort or fulfilling the needs of a baby, so it's probably not going well. Something else that we do know, and this is kind of from the moment where we get a bit more information, is that when Bobby was only 2 years old, his mother died a horrific death where she was in a car accident and snapped her neck. Like, it's very tragic and it's very sad. She was only 17 at the time. Bobby briefly then stayed with his maternal grandparents, but then he ended up being placed in the foster care system because his grandfather was also an alcoholic. And it wasn't his grandparents who decided to give Bobby up. It was the authorities who stepped in and took Bobby away due to reports of his grandfather's behavior. So it is a very sad and rocky start to life for little Bobby. He was placed in the foster care system and he ended up going around 6 different homes before he was adopted. Now I'm going to put this into a bit more of a condensed timeline. So his mother died when he was around 2. He moved in with his grandparents and then he went into the foster care system and bounced around 6 different homes before he was adopted. And he was adopted at the age of 2.5. So in the space of about 6 months, he moved around at least 7 to 8 times just after suffering the loss of his mum too. I know he's very young and you don't think kids will remember things, but trust me, they do. And I know at 2 years old, my daughter could say mama. And who knows, maybe Bobby knew who his mum was. So it's like, it's very sad. It is very sad. But yes, little Bobby did get adopted. And not only did he have new parents, but he also got a new name. He went from Bobby Conger to Robert Henry Mormon. So there you go. That's where the name confusion came from. Okay. I'm just going to call him Robert from now on, because that is his new name. His new parents, well, their names were Roberta and Henry Mormon. So I can see where Bobby's new name came from. Robert Henry Mormon is the son of Roberta and Henry Mormon. Now, Roberta and Henry, they were well respected in their community of Flagstaff, Arizona, which is about 4 hours north from Tucson, where Robert was born. Henry Mormon owned a taxi cab company, and Roberta was the social, bubbly, very typical 1950s stay-at-home wife, and she always dreamed of being a mother. Now, I'm not sure if they had any fertility issues, but they just didn't seem to have any kids of their own, so they decided to adopt. Well, Roberta decided to adopt. Henry was a bit standoffish about adopting, and I mean, I don't really know what the societal view on adopting was like back in the 1950s. Like, did it make it obvious you couldn't naturally have kids, or was there a bit of shame to it? I'm not sure. I wasn't around then. I wasn't there. But Henry thought the idea of adopting someone else's child was odd, and Roberta wanted nothing more than to be a mum. And since she was a stay-at-home wife, she wanted children for company and something to do and to dote on and love. So Henry gave in, and I'm sure it was like, oh, just quit your yapping and adopt the kid type of situation. And they got Bobby and it changed his name to Robert. And it's kind of lucky that his name was Bobby, because isn't that like a nickname for Robert? Bobbert. I don't get nicknames, man. Like, how do you get Dick from Richard? I don't understand. But now the Mormons, and I will just say it's not spelt like the religion, it's MORMAN. So the way I was trying to pronounce it to like explain the spelling was, if you said the word Mormon, like the religion, in slow motion, so like Mormon. Mormon. Just to try and get all the letters. But anyway, the Mormons were now this American dream family, right? They had the working dad, the stay-at-home wife, and now mother to this cute little boy. They had the picket fences, and I can just picture Roberta wearing like a polka dot A-line skirt or a dress with a white little apron, and she's got her hair kind of boofed up like bouffant. And you see it? Yeah, I know you do. I know you see it. Now, as Robert started getting older, he definitely showed signs that he was developmentally delayed, right? He was a bit slow to the talking. He couldn't regulate his feelings at all. Now, I know young children have difficulties doing this anyway, and this is where us as parents and adult figures and guardians or whatever your relationship to a child may be, This is where we step in and we help them learn how to regulate their feelings or express their emotions. But Robert just didn't seem to be able to do so whatsoever. And the Mormons, who, like I said, were popular in their community, their friends thought the family was now quite an odd mix. Like, the attitude was that Robert was not the best choice of kid to adopt for the Mormons, which is a disgusting attitude because all children deserve a forever home. And it doesn't matter what their development is like. It doesn't matter what kind of challenges they may face due to disabilities, whether it be physical or mental. All kids deserve love. And it's not for the housewives of Flagstaff to gossip about. The word used most often to describe Robert was weird, but there'd be no follow-up. It'd just be, oh, he was a weird kid. He was weird. It's like, why? Why was he weird? Like, even Roberta and Henry's family members would talk bad about Robert and call him weird. Like, it's just, it's terrible. Seeing as this kid was born into a broken home, his young single mom, like I said, couldn't fulfill the needs of a young baby, especially if she was dealing with alcoholism, then tragically dying at 17 years old, Robert then moving around so much, like, give the kid a fucking break. He doesn't need to be judged for things that are out of his control. I can tell you now, he had absolutely no say in the matter. And if he did, do you think he'd want any of it? No! So just stop calling him names and be adults and just love and care for the child. God, it just makes me so angry. Now, not surprising, school was just another environment where Robert was at a disadvantage. He had learning issues. He was placed in special ed classes. He was bullied, picked on, isolated from his peers, and had a really rough time. His only saving grace was Roberta, his adopted mother. She loved him to absolute bits, which is great because that's exactly what he needed. But she couldn't be with him 24/7, like when he was at school and as he grew up. And of course, in the household in the 1950s, you don't argue back with your husband. And if you're around your family, you need to be the respectable young lady who doesn't talk back, who doesn't step out of line. So she probably didn't, like, publicly stick up for him, but she did dote on him and she did love him. But as Robert grew up, he may have been slow, but he wasn't useless. And I'm going to say that quite a few times, I think. So he started to pick up the fact that even the Mormons, like the family, didn't want to be around him and isolated him. The cousins, the nieces, the nephews, anyone around his age, like, didn't want to play with him, didn't want to include him. One family member called him a, quote, throwaway child, end quote. Like, fuck, like, that's such a disgusting thing to say about a kid because you don't throw kids away. That's like the complete opposite of what you do. You have to bring them in close and you have to give them lots of snuggles and cuddles and let them know how loved they are. But fuck, like, Robert was just this kid who up until the age of 13 hadn't really done anything wrong other than be, like, slow at learning. But that wasn't even his fault. So fucking, I just get mad at people who don't treat kids the way they're supposed to be treated. Anyway, I just said who up until the age of 13 hadn't really done anything wrong. So what happened at 13 years old? Well, in 1961, Robert was committed to a state mental hospital because he accidentally shot Roberta. Like, the one person who cares about him. Now, she didn't die, and in my opinion, it was a complete accident. Now, I listened to a few podcasts and I watched a few things about Robert, and depending on who you listen to, some people say, like, he accidentally shot Roberta. And then some people, like myself, say he accidentally shot her. Like, I totally believe that this was a complete accident. One that, yes, could have been avoided, but there was no malice. You know, there was no malicious intent. There was no deadly intent. What had happened was that Robert had a .22 caliber rifle, which I have no idea where he got it from, and obviously that's how this all could have been avoided if he didn't get his hands on a gun. But anyway, I digress. He had the .22 caliber rifle and he wanted to show it to his mum. So he called her into his room and he made her sit down on the bed and was like, "Mum, I've got something to show you." And it just made me think, like, you know when kids come home with art that is literally just scribbles and they want to show you and they think it's the best thing they've ever done and they're so proud. And you're like, "Whoa, what is it? Like, abstract art? Is it Picasso? Like, what am I looking at?" And they want you to put it up on the walls or on the fridge. And you're like, "Why don't we go put it in that art drawer? Yeah? Yeah?" And they're like, no. But anyway, this is what Robert was like. He was so excited to show his mum this gun that he found because it was exciting to him. And as he pulled the rifle out, the gun discharged and it fired a bullet that grazed Roberta. Now, obviously, this gave her quite a bit of a fright. And it was Henry that called the authorities, where Robert was taken and placed in a state mental hospital. So it's a hard situation because it's like, what do you do? If it was an accident, does he really need to go to a state mental hospital? But then if it wasn't an accident, then maybe he does. So who knows? What I found interesting though was when authorities were talking to Henry and Roberta about Robert, Henry was like on the major defense and he was like, "Oh, I didn't even want to adopt the kid in the first place. And this was all Roberta's idea." And it's like, fuck, like I'm laughing because it's so stupid. Henry's all like, "Oh, nothing to do with me. Oh, I'm going to just look over here. Not my kid." Like, fuck off, man. Robert's story is sad. And now he does go on to do some really unthinkable things that doesn't make any of this funny. But at this point in life, the way he's being treated is really terrible. It really is. He's just been completely isolated by anyone and everyone who should love him. Now, it's unknown how long Robert was in the hospital for, but long enough that, you know, I could find out about it and tell you. But after Robert left the hospital, he did go back to school and he graduated from high school. He decided to go to barber college, but then never went on to be a barber. But instead, he worked for the US Forest Service as a dishwasher in one of their cafes. But Robert, even with being developmentally challenged, he wasn't useless. Like I said earlier, he was slow, but he wasn't useless. You know, he got his driver's license. He went to work. He was just a simple dude. It wouldn't have been ideal for him to live on his own because even though he could get himself dressed and drive to work and whatnot, he probably wouldn't have taken care of himself very well, so he did continue to live at home. And then in 1967, when Robert was 19, his dad, Henry, unfortunately died. Again, I'm very sorry. I don't know how. I don't know how Henry died, but he did. And from then on, Roberta and Robert were super close. You know, it was as if this barrier between them had been knocked down and Roberta could be as affectionate as she could to her son without being ridiculed by her husband. But it did turn into quite an uncomfortable dynamic. I know you might be thinking, why am I squirmish? But you'll see in just a minute. So Roberta would have been about 51, 52 years old when Henry died and Robert was about 19. And she found comfort in her young son's presence. Now, not just to deal with the grief of her husband dying, but now Robert was doing all of the things her husband would have done. You know, mowing the lawn, changing the light bulbs, sexually satisfying her. You get it, okay? You get it. It's out there. I've said it. Roberta was taking advantage of her developmentally challenged son. And she was sexually abusing him. And Robert loved his mum because she was the only one there for him since she adopted him. So he did whatever she asked. I also, not meaning to be crude, but I don't imagine Robert had a girlfriend every other week. And I don't think he had a lot of knowledge in sexual relationships. So he was just clearly being taken advantage of. However, Robert got to a point where he decided to branch out. And now, trigger warning, from here on out, for the rest of the episode, it gets bad. Like, it's already been bad. Oh, it's probably been sad more than bad. But now it just gets worse. In 1972, at 24 years old, Robert came up with a plan to kidnap and rape one of the neighborhood mums. You know, he'd seen her walking around, he thought she was beautiful, and he wanted to take her like his mum had taken him, right? He said that he had rape fantasies about this mum, and we will talk a little bit about that later on. However, on that January morning in 1972, Robert chickened out on targeting the mum and decided her 8-year-old daughter would be the easier prey. So that's exactly what he did. He used his mother's car, Robert drove up and abducted this poor little girl at gunpoint. He then tried to drive her across the Arizona-Nevada border to Las Vegas. And even though it was about maybe a 4-5 hour car ride, like easily done in a day, they ended up staying in 2 motels, like 2 overnight stops. And unfortunately, and allegedly, Robert raped this young girl and made her perform sex acts on him while he drove as well. Allegedly. We'll get into that in just a minute as well. Now, at one point, the car got stuck in Temple Bar, which is about 2 hours south of Las Vegas, and Robert and this poor young girl ended up hitchhiking on the side of the road. And this is where Connie Jo Swanson and her husband, who were driving, they were passing through in their motorhome, saw them on the side of the road. And Connie Jo asked her husband to pull over because here were these two people and they're young people. Obviously, one of them is 8, but Robert's only 24. You know, that's kind of young. I say that. I'm 25 and I feel really old. But, you know, she's like, what are these two young kids? Because Connie Jo and her husband, they were in their 70s. So they were like, what are these crazy kids doing out? Like, you know, she wanted to pull over because they were also not dressed for the weather. Because it's winter in America in January and not summer like it is here in New Zealand. So the Swansons picked them up, gave them some food, and let the girl go to sleep in the bed at the back of the motorhome. But the little girl never said a word to either of them. Robert told the Swansons that he was trying to take his little sister to Las Vegas where their uncle lived and would be grateful for a ride anywhere near there. But old Connie Jo, she trusted her maternal instincts and she knew something was really off about this. She was more convinced that something was off when Robert took out his gun in the back of the motorhome and removed all the bullets. She did ask that Robert put the gun in the drawer, and Robert did agree, but she wasn't feeling good. So the Swansons didn't take their hitchhikers to Las Vegas, but instead to the nearest police station and dropped them off right outside. Connie Jo's husband then went round the corner to the nearest payphone and called the police and was like, Ayo, they're right outside. Go get them. So go the Swansons, because honestly, who knows what would have happened to that young girl if they didn't get picked up. And it's sad. So I'm very, very thankful for the Swansons. Go old Connie Jo. I love that Connie Jo. What a name. So the police simply escorted the two inside the station. They didn't have to go anywhere and pick them up. But they did question Robert and the young girl separately to find out what the hell was going on. And Robert just confessed and told them everything. Told them that he had abducted her and he had kidnapped her. And that's how they got to where they were. He did say he stopped taking his medication. And that's why he decided to, first off, go and rape the mum and kidnap the mum. But then he chickened out. So he even told the police that. Like, it's a lame excuse, but he's saying that it's just because he forgot to take his medication. So, it's the only thing we've got, so we'll roll with it. Robert also told the police that he was actually going to leave the girl locked in the car that got stuck in Temple Bar to die. But she was crying so much that he was like, oh, okay, I'll take you with me then. Like, fuck, sorry, Robert, you're such a nice guy. Oh my God. Like, what? It's just, ugh. Robert also told the police that he was planning on killing the Swansons and that he was going to steal their motorhome and drive it the rest of the way. So when the police asked why he didn't kill them, Robert said, quote, because they were nice to me, end quote. So it's like he's doing these really awful things and he made a monstrous decision taking that young girl and he hurt her. And just quickly, she was returned to her parents, obviously, and they had made a missing persons report. And, you know, thankfully she was as okay as could be in that situation. But he's made all these decisions, but at the end of the day, he's just a really fucking simple guy. And he's like, oh, I didn't kill them because they were nice to me. Like, what the fuck? Okay. Now, frustratingly, and this is why I had to say he allegedly raped this young girl, Robert was only charged with the kidnap and not the rape because from what I could find slash lack of stuff I could find, it all pointed to there not being enough evidence of rape and sexual assault to charge him, but definitely enough to convict him of kidnapping. Now, I'm not sure if the young girl had a rape kit done or if her parents just like whisked her away and wanted nothing to do with it. She obviously was a minor at the time, so everything's pretty closed up on that, which is fair enough. It's just frustrating because with the kidnapping charge only, Robert, like, he got a lighter sentence. Well, it is lighter, but at the same time, it's not. So he was given a sentence of 9 years to life to be served at Arizona State Prison Complex in Florence. So it's like, okay, yeah, there is the possibility he'll spend the rest of his life in prison. Cool. But it means that he would be eligible for parole after only 9 years. So it's like, oh, well, if the rape charge was on there as well, it may have been 20 years or 25 years. You know, it just... But there is a possibility he could spend life as well just for kidnapping alone. So, you know, take it as you will. Now, as we know in many cases, nobody ever serves their full prison sentence. And Robert was no different. He would only spend 7 years in prison and he was paroled in January of 1979. So he couldn't even do like the bare minimum of his sentence, which was 9 years. He's like, oh. And it would have come down to fucking like good behavior because everything's good behavior. It's like, of course he's on his best behavior. Like his victim isn't in prison with him. Fuck, I don't like the good behavior rule. I don't get it. His freedom, though, however, was short-lived, and due to violating his parole conditions, after 10 months, he was back in the slammer at Arizona State. I'm not sure what conditions he violated, but he did it, so after 10 months. So we'll kind of, like, erase those 10 months, because what even is that? Now, Roberta, let's not forget Roberta. I wish we could, but we can't. She still loved her baby boy and she stood by him through everything. And when he was in prison, even though she was getting on in years, you know, she's about early to mid 70s, she would take a 3-hour bus ride down to Florence and visit him weekly. Like she was a dedicated mummy, which wouldn't be bad if we didn't know how like close they were and all the stuff that she was doing to him. Like, damn, talk about uncomfortable. Now in 1984, so like I said, we're erasing that 10-month parole stint. Robert has been in prison for about 12, 13 years at this point, and he applied for something that is known as a compassionate furlough. Now a furlough, by definition, is an authorized absence from a federal prison by an inmate who is not under the escort of a staff member. So it's like this type of conditional release from either like work or prison or some sort of commitment that you have. But in a prison scenario, you can have a medical furlough if you have a serious medical condition or terminal illness that you need to go like actually into a hospice for, or you could have a compassionate furlough to leave prison if you have a family member who is sick or dying, or you can also get like just kind of like day passes out. Depending. There is a whole criterion around it and you have to be eligible for it, but you could actually just get out for a couple of days as long as you promise to be back. Now, for some reason, Robert was granted compassionate furlough a few times and he would be able to spend 72 hours, 3 days at a time with his mum. Now, she wasn't sick or dying, but I don't know, I suppose since she was getting on like later in life and her age, I don't know why. But he got it a couple of times. Now, just a quick side note, this makes me wonder if a furlough came from Captain A. Murphy when he let Carl Panzram out of prison for the day and was like, you can go as long as you're back for dinner. Like, the concept is really similar. And it just makes me wonder if Spud Murphy started it all. Like, but fuck, like, there he is again. Our old mate Carl. I just want to be fucking done with him. Okay, back to Robert. So, on their third furlough together, and this began on Thursday, January 12th, 1984, instead of wasting a three-hour bus ride back to Flagstaff, Robert and his mother Roberta checked into the Blue Mist Motel in Florence. And this was literally just down the street from the prison complex, so really wasn't that far, but it meant they could just make the most out of their whole 72 hours together, which is just creepy. So they checked into room 22, and on the first day slash night, they just hung out, they caught up. Nobody really knows what happened, because nobody really saw them. But on the morning of Friday the 13th of January, and a little bit of spooky for you, Robert made a phone call to a woman called Marianne Southwood, and Marianne was a friend of Roberta's. She also lived locally and would pick Roberta up from the bus depot, drop her off at the prison, and take her back whenever she came down to see Robert, right? Robert called Marianne and asked if she could come to the motel in the afternoon and take him to Mesa, which is about an hour away, so that he could see a lawyer. Now, I suppose this doesn't really raise any red flags. He is a prison inmate. He deals with lawyers. It's not suspicious. Okay. However, after the phone call, Robert was then seen at a local store between 6:30 and 7 a.m. buying some snacks. But along with those snacks, he bought a buck knife and a steak knife. Now, the type of snacks he was buying, they didn't need cutting. They didn't need any knivesmanship. So, what's going on, Robert? What are you up to? After going to the store, Robert then went to the local pizza parlor, and this was around 8 a.m., and he bought a soda. Now, I'm not sure why he didn't just buy that at the store, but there you go. However, the owner of the pizza parlor used to be a prison guard down at the Arizona State Prison, and he knew Robert, and Robert knew him, so they struck up a conversation. Robert told him that he was on furlough, that he was with his mama, and he also mentioned that his mum wasn't feeling that well, but if she felt better later, they would come to the pizza parlor for dinner. And he's like, all right, bet. I hope your mum's okay. Have a good one. Here's your soda. At around 9 a.m., Robert went to the reception of the Blue Mist Motel, and he spoke to the receptionist and asked her if they could not send, like, the cleaners, the kind of the maid service, room service, and stop any phone calls going up to room 22, because his mother wasn't feeling well. He also asked for some disinfectant spray that he wanted to use to, like, keep the sides clean, anything his mother touched, like, he just wanted to keep it clean. Again, not really any red flags with this, like, to me, like, that makes sense, and especially, like, if you want to keep your own area tidy, you can just go and ask for some spray and that's absolutely fine. But the receptionist later on did say that Robert was dirty. He smelled really bad and he had something on his face that kind of looked like dried mud or dried blood. Yeah. So fast forward to the afternoon when Marianne arrives, Roberta's friend. She had bought some clothes with her that belonged to Roberta. Marianne kept some in her house for whenever Roberta came down to visit Robert. So because Roberta was going to be hanging around for a couple more days, she decided that she would drop them off to the motel. But when she got to room 22, Robert slightly cracked the door open and said that Roberta had been out of the motel since before 10 o'clock that morning, and he had absolutely no idea where she went. Marianne noticed that the room was extremely cold, like she got hit with a chill wave when Robert opened the door. And as they were getting ready to leave to go to Mesa, Robert told Marianne that his mum asked him to, like, put some of these, like, big garbage bags in the bin and get rid of them. So he pulled them out of their room, and these were, like, big, black, heavy-grade garbage bags. And as he pulled them out of the room, Marianne could see that Roberta's purse was still in the room, which is weird. Like, what 74-year-old woman goes out without her purse, her little pocketbook? So Marianne is starting to get suspicious, and she actually refuses to take the garbage bags out with him, and she doesn't take him to Mesa either. Like, she's just like, this is weird. Where's your mom? What the fuck is in these bags? Like, yo, I ain't going anywhere with you. So she leaves. But then around 4 p.m., Robert calls her and asks if she's heard from Roberta. He's like, I can't find my mom. Have you seen her? And Robert was like getting really worried because she hadn't come back to the hotel. Now, obviously, Marianne says no, but she does say that Robert convinced her that he was really worried because it really did sound like he had no idea where his mum was. Now, at about 4:30 p.m., Robert went back down to the motel reception and he asked, when does the garbage for the motel get collected? This was a Friday, so he asked if it was done, you know, the next morning on the Saturday. But the receptionist said that, well, no, they don't work on the weekends. It'll be collected on Monday. Robert explained to the receptionist that his mum had bought some spoiled meat down to Florence with her, and like it really needed to get thrown out. And the receptionist was like, well, you can't do that in your room. The garbage doesn't get collected till Monday. Why don't you go around and ask the local establishments if you can use their like big industrial dumpsters, right? So that's exactly what Robert did. He was seen at a liquor store where he asked the clerk if he could use their dumpster, and the clerk said no, which I thought was interesting, but I don't know, maybe they didn't have anything that would actually put spoiled meat in. I don't know what they're recycling in there, how many coloured bins they had back in 1984, but there you go. Robert then went back to the pizza parlour where he knew the owner, the ex-prison guard, and asked if he could dispose of the spoiled meat in his dumpster. And that would make a bit more sense, you know, they have to throw away food, so that would work. But the pizza parlour owner said no, and because he's an ex-prison guard, he is like, oh, this doesn't feel right. So the pizza guy, he actually calls the police and he tips them off and says, look, there's this dude, he's on furlough, he says his mum's not well, and now he's looking to dispose of spoiled meat. Like, ooh, it's just not right. So two police officers then headed down to the Blue Mist Motel, and this is at around 10:30 p.m. and they knocked on room 22, and Robert's standing there, and the police tell him that they're there to do a welfare check on his mum because they heard that she wasn't well. Robert, who was standing there wearing only a pair of unzipped trousers and a belt, said that, yeah, his mum was sick in the morning, but she felt better and she went to go visit a friend at around 6. He was just waiting for her to get home. But he was a little bit worried, but was doing okay. So the police, well, yes, they were there to make sure Roberta was okay, but they were there about the spoiled meat. So they had a look at some of the bins around the motel, but they couldn't see anything suspicious. They went back to the prison and decided to get a description of Roberta just in case there is an old woman like wandering around out there. They need to know what she looks like. And so they were able to get a partial description, and they decided to go back to the motel and talk to Robert and get a full description of his mother and say, hey, look, we might actually put out like a bolo. Tell us about your mum. What does she look like? They obviously wanted to know a bit of a timeline as well. Like, what was the last thing they said to each other? When was the last time Robert saw her? So Robert told the police that he was worried about his mum because she hadn't taken her medication with her and her purse was still in the room. Robert said that. And he even was like, I'll show you. Like, come to the room, I'll show you. Robert told the police that in the morning, his mum asked him to go to the store to buy a knife that she wanted to give to a friend. And that when he got back from doing that, his mum was gone. Now, obviously, this kind of contradicts the actual version of events we just spoke about, because Robert was saying that this was around 10 o'clock in the morning when he was actually at that store between 6:30 and 7. So there you go, Robert, you're telling a lie. But of course, the police don't know that at that moment. Robert also told the officers that a friend of his had come and given him some cow guts and he was trying to get rid of them. Didn't know how, so he just flushed them down the toilet. So it's like, whoa, what is it? Is it spoiled meat? Is it cow guts? Why is everyone giving you, like, yuck, stinky meat, Robert? Like, what is this? So as Robert is telling the police about his mum and about the timeline and whatnot, Robert then asks them where he could dispose of 25 pounds of spoiled hamburger meat that his mum had bought with her. And it's like, 25 pounds of spoiled hamburger meat? Like, what the fuck, man? And the police were like, well, if you're going to do anything, you need to talk to the officer in charge of his unit at the prison because you don't want to get in trouble and you need to talk it through with someone, right? So at 12:20 a.m., 20 minutes after midnight on Saturday the 14th of January, Robert called the lieutenant in charge of his prison unit and asked him for some help. He said that he had this meat, he had stinky cow guts, but he also said that his cousin, another person, his cousin, had dropped off some dog bones a couple of days earlier. So I'm not sure when he thinks that was, but he said a couple of days earlier, and he wanted to give them to the prison guard dogs, like there were some bones for them to play and chew on. And I'm thinking, you've just told him that they're dog bones. Like, what? Ugh. I don't know if it means like the bones of a dog or like bones for a dog. I don't know. I'm not asking too many questions, okay? I don't want to know the answer. But he told the lieutenant in charge of his prison unit that he needed to get rid of them and there was some other stuff he wanted to chuck out as well. So the lieutenant agreed to help and he drove down the street and he came to the Blue Mist Motel and Robert put a box in the back of the lieutenant's truck. He then said, oh, can I actually come back to my cell at prison and get some things? But the lieutenant refused. You can't do that. You can't. Once you're out of prison, like on furlough or whatnot, you can't just walk in and out. It's not a hotel. You can't just come and go as you please. So, you know, you could be smuggling things, you could be taking things out, you could be bringing things to other inmates. It's a no-go. It's a no-fly zone, okay? Okay. So after the lieutenant refused, he returned back to the prison and put the box out by the prison dumpsters. He could see that there were some bones in there, but he didn't look too closely. Now, at around 1:30 in the morning, the lieutenant received a call from the police officers that were down at the motel that Robert was now starting to lose it a little bit. He was like being really suspicious, and then he was like going on and on about throwing out the spoiled meat. And they still hadn't heard back or found Roberta, Robert's mum. So the lieutenant went out to that box of bones that Robert had given him, and he looked at it a little bit closer and he saw that there was a little bit of flesh and a little bit of skin and stuff still on some of the bones. And he had the box taken to the hospital for analysis. Now, back at the Blue Mist Motel, Robert is really going crazy, right? He's talking about the spoiled meat, but then in the same breath, he's kind of saying like, oh, where's my mom? And she needs to be here and I'm getting all worried. So the police are there. They're trying to keep him calm. They're trying to just talk it through with him. They're trying to control the scene, control the situation, right? Now, they then asked Robert if he wanted to sit in the police car to calm down and wait for their mum, if he wanted to have like a look at the things, because even though he's probably like in his 30s at this point, Robert is still slow and he speaks like a child, and you can kind of see that there is something not quite right with him. So the police are like, look, go sit in the car, like go have a look at all the buttons and stuff. I don't know. But anyway, Robert does, he gets in the police car and he actually starts kind of falling asleep. He dozes on and off, he chats with the officers. But then at 2:45 in the morning, the officers at the Blue Mist Motel are informed that the bones that were in the box given to the lieutenant were indeed human bones. So, of course, Robert was handcuffed and he was told he was under the arrest on suspicion of murder. But as they're driving to the police station, Robert says, quote, you can change the charge. She's dead, end quote. Robert told the officers that he had called the prison because he was afraid they might be mad that his mother was not with him and that he just like lost his cool and his mum like made him take his father's place and do things he couldn't handle. Like, he was really losing it in the back of the car. He was like, oh, you know, she made me do this and she made me do that and I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And he was really starting to go off. And the police are telling him, like, stop talking. Wait till we're in the interview room. Wait till we've done this. Wait till, like, we've got to follow procedure here. He was read his Miranda rights. And at the police station, Robert confessed to killing and dismembering his mother's body. So when the police went back to the Blue Mist Motel room number 22 to conduct a search, they honestly, it was like walking into a horror film scene, right? There was blood everywhere on the bed, towels, washcloth. There was a cooking pot stained with blood on the walls, the floor. There was like a scouring pad with blood stains and human tissue. They also found the buck knife and a steak knife. They also found one of Roberta's, like, brassieres, her bra, hanging in the closet with $500 in cash, safety pinned to it. And that kind of made me laugh because, all right, girl talk. All right, boys, just close your ears for a sec if you want. If not, because we're going to talk about boobs. So you know when you don't have any pockets, which is a common occurrence in women's clothing, or like your pockets are full or not big enough, and you just need somewhere to put your phone or your vape or your FBOS card, you stick it down your bra. Well, Roberta was doing that before doing that was cool. And she safety pinned $500 of cash in her bra. I love that. Roberta's gross, but you go, girl. Now, in the dumpsters that were near the motel and around the area, the police found the garbage bags that contained, okay, get ready, it contained Roberta's head, her thoracic, her pelvic area, her feet and hands that had been cut off. There was muscle and skin that were cut from her limbs, as well as, like, you know, like bits of towel. There was a razor. There was the package that the steak knife had been sold in, so they could put that to where he bought it from. And there were also Roberta's pajamas. They found all of these in different trash bags that were kind of dumped around the place. But then the police also found some of Roberta's fingers in the sewage pipes that were underneath the hotel. So it wasn't cow guts that he was flushing down the toilet, let me tell you that. So trying to understand how Robert could brutally murder the only person in his life who ever loved him. Yes, I know she did very awful things, but, you know, when Robert was young, she was the only one who ever showed him any kind of care and affection. So trying to understand why he would do something like this, Robert's cell at the prison was also searched, and they found some interesting things. So they found a notebook that had lots of, like, scribbles in it, including instructions on how to train a dog to make bank deposits. He also had, like, a document that was called, quote, Last Will and Testament, end quote, and on it was how Roberta's estate and anything that she owned was going to be transferred to Robert. Now, in Roberta's real will, this is exactly what she had written as well. She did want to transfer anything and everything she owned to Robert. However, she had made a note that she didn't believe Robert was competent enough to, like, handle the money by himself, and that it needed to be placed in a trust, and there had to be an executor and someone to overlook the finances. So if Robert ever wanted to get money out, it would have to be like this whole ordeal about it. And Robert didn't want that. So he had forged this letter, or like this will, where he took that part out essentially, and he wanted to just have the money all put in his bank account and not have to ask anyone what to do. So once the police had managed to locate as much of Roberta's body as they could and put it back together as best as they could, the medical examiner determined that Roberta had died of asphyxiation as a result of something being held over her face and blocking her air supply. He also determined that she had sustained bruises as a result of moderate force from a fist or a blunt object on her left upper arm, both of her breasts, and on her lower back. Roberta had also been cut by a knife or other sharp pointed object on her right breast and 5 times in her right buttock. He couldn't find any defensive wounds on Roberta's hands, and he couldn't find any marks indicating that she had been tied up, but Robert had cut her wrists and her ankles, like cut her hands and her feet off by them, that any marks such as like rope marks or whatever it may be, ligature marks, it would have been impossible to find. The medical examiner did also find bruises in and around Roberta's mouth, which was consistent with being gagged. It was noted that the way that Robert dismembered his mother's body, it was really meticulous, right? Like the cutting of the hands at the wrist, like where the rope would have been, and at the ankles for the feet, and her knuckles, like he cut her fingers off at her knuckles, like just to be absolutely safe that he couldn't prove whether she had been bound up or not. Like, it was really well thought through, and he said that the whole process would have taken about 2 hours. Now, interestingly, the medical examiner found no evidence of sexual activity. Like, they tested the sheets and the bedspread, and they found no evidence of semen or any other kind of bodily fluid. But it couldn't be ruled out, of course. The medical examiner could also determine that Roberta had been alive when she received the bruises and the cuts, but he couldn't tell if she was conscious, but she definitely was alive. And he said that the type of cuts that were made into her body would have been extremely painful if she was conscious. And the fact that there were no reports of any kind of like screaming or any struggle going on in room 22 on the night of Thursday, January the 12th, so the first night they were out, this is when everything happened. The fact that nobody heard anything leads the medical examiner to determine that she wasn't conscious, but she was very much still alive. So Robert Henry Moorman was charged with first degree murder for what he did to his mum. And at the trial, there were numerous witnesses that would testify about how odd Robert was, how he switched conversation topics all the time, how he would say things like he had ties to the mafia. And although his mother supported him generously and like was always there for him and always came to visit him and whatnot, he never felt he could ever be successful because of her and how much she kind of controlled him. And then he spoke about how for years she had been like taking advantage of him sexually and making him do all these things, especially after his dad died. And he would say these things to people and nobody really knew what to believe because he would be switching all the time. And like, if someone says they have claims and ties to the mafia, you're probably not going to believe them if it's just some like, sorry, but like white fat old guy who wears glasses that make his eyes too big. And then he also comes out in the same breath and says that his mother abuses him. Like, you just don't know what to believe, right? So Robert's defense team were trying to get Robert to plead not guilty by reason of insanity. He was visited and examined by many doctors. A psychologist, Dr. Overbeck, who interviewed Robert for almost 10 hours and gave him, you know, like all these tests to do, and he looked through his medical history in school and in prison records. Dr. Overbeck concluded that Robert suffered from organic delusional syndrome, pedophilia, and schizoid personality disorder. He was unable to appreciate the nature and consequences of his actions when he killed his mother, and favored in the side that, yeah, he is not guilty by reason of insanity. Dr. Overbeck also noted that a delusional diagnosis is difficult because it depends on whether or not you believe Robert's allegations of the incestuous relationship he had with his mum, right? Because if it's not true, then he's being delusional about it. But if he is being true, then he's not being delusional about it. So there was no evidence to suggest that it happened, only Robert's word. But Robert was a pretty straight up guy. Like, when he got arrested for kidnapping the 8-year-old girl, like, he confessed straight away, and he did lie about not knowing where his mother was and whatnot, but as soon as he's like put into a pinch, he spills the tea and he goes straight away, and he doesn't lie, he just says what's happened. So to keep up a lie of that his mother had abused him for years and years and years, it just seemed a little bit out of character for Robert and his mental disabilities. Now, the prosecution called 3 expert witnesses. This was Dr. Cleary, who was a court-appointed expert psychiatrist, and she diagnosed Robert as suffering from pedophilia and antisocial personality disorder. We've talked a lot about that recently. Fucking Carl Panzram. And Dr. Cleary stated that he did not believe that Robert was unable to understand and appreciate the nature of his actions. However, because of the bizarre writings in the notebook that was found in Robert's cell, it made him a little less certain of this conclusion. So he really didn't know which way to lean. He's saying like, no, he could understand what was going on. But then you read his writings and it's like, oh my gosh, this is the journal of a madman. Like, he had no idea what was going on. So it was really hard for Dr. Cleary to say. Dr. Tuckler, however, was a board certified forensic psychiatrist, and he had diagnosed Robert on four previous occasions, beginning in his teens, and he testified that Robert does not suffer from organic delusional syndrome, but suffers from pedophilia with antisocial personality disorder, and he is capable of understanding the nature of his actions. And I think because Dr. Tuckler had seen Robert multiple times, like, he was one of the doctors at the state mental hospital that he went to when he was 13, and he'd seen him a few times, like, in prison. So Dr. Tuckler really knew Robert quite well compared to the other doctors that came and testified, and said, like, no, he knows what's going on. He's slow, but he's not useless, like I've said multiple times. However, Dr. Tuckler believed Robert about the sexual abuse allegations against his mum. Robert said that on the night he murdered her, they did engage in sexual intercourse. Robert said that his mum wanted her breasts pinched, and she was making all these noises, and Robert just put a pillow over her face so he wouldn't hear them because he didn't like it. And at that point, he knew that it was wrong, or he didn't enjoy it anymore and he didn't want to do it anymore. But because she was so controlling over his life, and he found out that he was going to be controlling her even after she dies, he was angry. He snapped, and now she's making him have sex with him. He put the pillow over her face and kept it there. And that's how she died. So Dr. Tuckler believes that Roberta's death was an accident, which was quite interesting for the jury and for the defense as well. They hadn't even thought about that. This was the state's expert witness saying he believes that it was an accident. So it kind of threw everyone for a little bit of a spin. The last expert witness was Dr. Buschbaum, who was a neurologist, and he had examined Robert and testified that while he found no evidence of organic brain defect, he couldn't actually rule out the possibility. So it's like, he might have been, he might not have been, who knows, who knows. So the motives that were talked about for Robert murdering his mother were, was it possibly manslaughter, was it accidental because of the sexual abuse, or was it on purpose because of the sexual abuse, or was it actually because of her will and testament, saying that if she died, Robert would get everything, but it would be under an executor, really, and he'd have to ask permission. And did Robert didn't want any of that, and that's why he had made this, like, will and testament in his cell and put that, no, that's not going to happen. It's all going to go to me, and I can do with it whatever the fuck I want. But it was never really made clear as to why he did what he did. So after 2 hours of deliberation, the jury found Robert guilty of first-degree murder. So they completely rejected his insanity defense. They didn't deny that there was something wrong with Robert, and we've talked about this before in other cases where the insanity defense comes in. There can still be something wrong with someone, and they could still have mental disabilities or mental illness, but that doesn't mean that they're legally insane, and they don't know right from wrong, and they don't know or don't understand the nature of their actions. So yes, there was something wrong with Robert, but no, he knew exactly what he was doing. And so the jury found him guilty of first degree murder. Now the trial judge received a pre-sentencing report and held a sentencing hearing at which Robert's counsel, his defense team, they argued that Robert really didn't know what was going on. You know, he had an inability to fully understand his actions, and you know, in prison, he had good conduct, he didn't cause any trouble, he was able to go on furlough because of good behavior, like he kept to himself, he was quiet, no trouble at all. So his defense team wanted to get Robert life in prison. And because other than this murder and the kidnap he had done 12 years prior, he was well behaved in prison, which we've just talked about. It's bullshit. Of course people are going to be like well behaved in prison, unless you're Carl Panzram, but like, we can't let that guy go, can we? But Robert was okay. Robert was fine. So there's no reason to give him the death penalty because of his mental disabilities as well. You shouldn't give him the death penalty, just give him life in prison. However, the trial judge found three statutory aggravating factors. So the first one was that he was already serving a life sentence. Yes, it was like 9 years to life, but it was still a life sentence. The motive having a monetary kind of undertone to it, and also just how cruel and how heinous this murder was. It wasn't just like a shot in the forehead. It was asphyxiation, which takes a long time, and it takes a lot of strength and exertion of your energy to fucking strangle someone or asphyxiate someone. But then it was the dismembering and it was the hiding and it was the lying. Like, it was over and beyond, unnecessary, overforce. What is it called? Overkill. It really was. So those were the three factors that the judge took into consideration. And the only mitigating factor that would have possibly not given him the death sentence was his diminished ability to understand actions. Because yes, he didn't understand fully, but he understood some things. But because it was 3-1 on the aggravating and mitigating factors, the judge sentenced Robert Henry Moorman to death. Yeah, he would be executed by lethal injection. Now, there's not much to say about the remainder of Robert's life in prison. He was pretty quiet. He kept to himself. He stayed out of trouble. His defense team did appeal his sentence quite a few times, but to no avail. And the reason why it didn't go through, they even went to the Arizona Supreme Court. The reason why it didn't go through was just the nature of his actions after the incident, the whole dismembering, the whole hiding it and being able to lie so easily to people about it and, hanging around the police officers for quite some time in the parking lot of the Blue Mist Motel and not saying anything once. But then you add the will and the money side to it. It really made this murder look to be premeditated. Who knows? I don't think it was premeditated, but it definitely was a bit suspicious. But regardless, any appeal was denied and he remained on death row. Now, other inmates and guards all noted that there was this dude, right? And he looked 10 years older than what he actually was, but he always spoke like a child, right? There was something wrong with Robert, but he wasn't completely out of touch with himself. However, he, as he got older and his voice went all gruffy and stuff, he just spoke like a kid. That comes down to his fetal alcohol syndrome. But other than that, he looked really harmless. I'll post some photos on Instagram because this dude looks whack. There's this one photo and he's literally got the Mr. Burns hairdo going on, but it's sticking out. It's kind of weird and it's kind of creepy and he makes me feel uncomfortable, but there you go. Now in prison, he worked as a porter and a janitor. He did suffer a major stroke in 2007. And then in 2011, he was hospitalized twice for an appendectomy and a quintuple heart bypass. So he had some serious health complications and that's some pretty major, major surgeries he's got going on. So his health deteriorated quite a lot in prison. But other than that, he just went about his business and kept to himself. There's literally nothing really more to say. Now, his execution date was set for the 29th of February, 2012. So leap year day, pretty special, comes once every 4 years. However, Robert fell ill once again on the 16th of February 2012, and his lawyers requested clemency once again, but it was denied 4-1 by the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. So on the 29th of February 2012, after being in prison for 40 years, Robert Henry Moorman was executed by lethal injection. His last meal was his dinner the night before, and he had a hamburger, fries, 2 beef burritos, 3 Cokes, and Rocky Road ice cream. When Robert was in the execution room, he used his final words to apologize to his family, but also the family of the 8-year-old girl that he had kidnapped and assaulted back in 1972. He said, quote, "I hope this brings closure and they can start healing now. I just hope that they will forgive me in time," end quote. Now, interestingly, the lethal injection is usually a 3-drug concoction. It's an anesthetic, a muscle relaxant, and a heart stopper. So it's typically sodium thiopental or pentobarbital, followed by pancuronium bromide, and then finally potassium chloride. However, and unfortunately for Robert, on the Monday before his execution, it was discovered that 2 of the drugs had expired, so he was only going to be given 1 of them. Now, I couldn't find out which one, but I imagine it would have been potassium chloride to stop his heart. So at his execution, when it was administered to him, it was noted that instead of falling asleep and staying asleep, like all the other inmates who die by lethal injection do, Robert had his eyes open the entire time and he kind of seizured a little bit. And instead of the execution lasting about 6 minutes, it took him 10 minutes. And at 10:30 on the morning of February 29th, 2012, 63-year-old Robert Henry Moorman was pronounced dead. Now, there is quite a debate on whether or not Robert deserved the death sentence, like taking into account the sexual abuse he suffered at the hands of his adopted mother, which, like, even if it is true, which it probably, like, I believe it's true. I believe it is. Like, he's a pretty simple guy, and that does happen, unfortunately. Like, people with disabilities and challenges do get taken advantage of. And the another reason why I think this is true, and I said we were going to circle back to this, it makes me wonder where Robert had those rape fantasies about that neighborhood mum, the one that he wanted to kidnap but instead took her daughter, because you don't just fantasize about raping people, right? That typically arises when any kind of sexual encounter you've had is coupled with violence or negative experience. Obviously not all of them and not for everybody, but we hear so many times of like these serial killers or these murderers or these bad people who go on and rape people. It's because any kind of sexual encounter they've had has been bad. It's been terrible. So maybe, and to me, it's likely that Robert was abused by his mum and he wanted to be the abuser instead of the abusee. Now, of course, he still goes on to do unthinkable things, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been punished at all. I just don't think he should have been put to death. Now, I have said this a couple of times. I haven't really dived into it, but I'm not for the death penalty. I'm actually quite against it. And for a number of reasons, I'm not going to get into all of them, but I just think it's kind of a bit of a cop-out. I think prisoners should be able to sit with their actions and their consequences, and they have a miserable time. It's quite hard to talk about prisons now without thinking of fucking Carl Panzram and what happened to him in prison and whatnot. Like, I said so many times through his episodes that we covered, prison shouldn't be a good time, right? It shouldn't be this like nice little retreat, this little getaway, but it shouldn't be inhumanely cruel. But I think like for Robert, he had been isolated his whole life from family, from his classmates, and then from society, obviously, when he went and kidnapped and allegedly raped that young girl. Like, he had been isolated, like, just keep him in prison. The other thing is, he was already dying. Like, he had been in hospital quite a few times. He fell ill just before his execution. Like, okay, you might see it as just speeding up the process, but at the same time, it's like, he was dying. Just let him die. You know, I'm just, I think as well, what doesn't sit right with me about his execution was the drug concoction. The fact that they didn't delay his execution so that they could have all three. There's a reason that you give a patient an anesthetic. It's so that they are unconscious. They don't feel anything. There's a reason you give them a muscle relaxant. It's so they don't feel anything. And then you're giving them a heart stopper. The fact that Robert was like awake and conscious pretty much the whole time and then seizured, like that doesn't sit right with me, especially when he already had some like mental disabilities. It just feels like another way he was taken advantage of. Like, I'm not trying to sympathize with him because what he did was fucking horrific. Like, he murdered his mum and then he cut her up and chopped her into pieces and then he boiled her skin off the bones and sent the bones to the prison. Like, It's horrendous and it's horrific, but I don't like this ending for Robert. I think he should have sat and rotted in prison until he died, which he was about to do. So, yeah. I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one, but I'd like to know what you think. Okay, so like, let me know because I'm quite conflicted with this one. Like, you can slide in my DMs on Instagram at Coffee and Crime Podcast. You can even put what you think in the Q&A box beneath Spotify. You can email me coffeeandcrimepod@gmail.com and we can chat about it because honestly, guys, I'm actually quite stuck with this one. I feel a little bit like depleted. You know, when we cover cases and then usually it's like, and because of this case, there was this law that came out. And because of this case, this was this ending. And there was a trust, there was a charity, there was this just ends. Right? Like, it just ends for Robert. And I think it's just sad. His whole life was sad. And I feel like, I don't know, it could have been a lot different if he was just showed a bit more love by other people. And if Roberta hadn't allegedly, you know,
abused him. That would have changed a lot of things too. So, yeah. That's kind of it. I feel like this is a really flat way to end an episode, but that is all I've got for today. It just kind of ends. Yeah. So, that is all from me. You can, like I said, you can get in touch with me. You can let me know what you thought about the episode. I feel like this is quite a shit episode, even though at the start I was like, I'm prepared, I'm ready. But as you, like, I'm reading it, I'm like, oh, well, this is actually kind of a meh way to end. So, let's try and perk this up, right? You can leave a rate and a review on any platform that you're listening on. You can also check out the Redbubble link if you'd like any merch. I have uploaded some new designs, so get in there and get yourself some goodies. But also, just get in touch with me. Let's chat about this. I need to decompress this one because I don't really know what to think of it anymore. But that is all about Robert Henry Mormon. I am looking forward to my kind of list and my schedule I've got coming up. I've got some cases scheduled that I've had a few requests for, which has been absolutely amazing. I also put a poll on my Instagram about what family series you guys want next. We obviously just did Deadly Daughters a couple of weeks ago. So it was either like Malicious Mothers, Frightening Fathers, or Brutal Brothers. And I realized it wouldn't have been Brutal Brothers. It would have been Sinister Sons, because we did Deadly Daughters, Malicious Mothers, Frightening Fathers, and Sinister Sons. I'm a sucker for alliterations, if you couldn't tell that by now. But it was really close between the mothers and fathers. So I've kind of got an idea, and I'm very excited. But once I figure out the best way to execute this idea, I will be letting you guys know. But that is all from me. Intros and outros are so shit. I'm so sorry. But that is all from me. Thank you for joining me, and I hope your coffee was delicious. But until next time, be safe, be good, be better, and all that cheesy crap. And I will catch you guys next time right here at Coffee and Crime. Bye!